post on our wall your thoughts about our shows and network. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit VoiceAmericaVariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit VoiceAmerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkgaard. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are solely those of Valerie, her guests, and callers. Now here's your host, Valerie Kirkgaard.
I am your host. I am here. I'm a firewalker, Olympic torchbearer, screamer at this moment, and I've been creating dynamic radio dialogues and issues that matter since 1987, and boy, oh boy, do we have issues that matter today. I'm on the air today with Ken Cousins and with C.W. Wright. Ken is Chief Justice of the California Republic, and C.W. Wright is Vice President of the Republic of the United States of America, and I personally am a peace emissary, and I'm in the House, and other members of our team are traveling. And we're here today to say, hey, happy first day of Mercury in retrograde to you. And I went to play racquetball this morning, and boy, wasn't that fun. There was a breakdown on the highway. At 5 o'clock, the highway was closed. When I got to the racquetball courts and was playing racquetball with my girlfriend, all of a sudden the lights went out in the racquetball court and the place went totally dark. We shifted into the next racquetball court, and when we were done, we were locked in. And the day has been like that. And all of a sudden I was going, what is this today? And then I was like, oh, yeah, this is Mercury in retrograde happening in spades. So I'd love to blame Mercury in retrograde for the absurdity of our Congress and the president of the corporation of the United States of America and what they think they can do to, like, hoodwink Americans. And I'm an American who's, like, totally had it with these turkeys, which is why I put so much of my time into the Republic and happily to do so. And what came across my desk was, it was, I actually saw it for the first time last night and then again this morning. It was called Super Congress Legislation Passed Today. And I guess the Congress has just been too much of a problem for the president to handle. He can't ramrod things through there often enough. So they've come up with this brilliant plan where they've created a Super Congress. And this Super Congress is a group of 12 people, 6 from each party, that will have the power to make laws, including tax laws, any of those things, and they report directly to the president. So we've taken this Congress of like 400-600 people, I don't know what it is, and reduced it to the 12 people here, and then these 12 people, they're going to review stuff, and then they'll make up all the options and everything, and then they'll bring it to Congress, and then they will, they won't permit any debate on the issue. And then Congress gets to vote yes or no, and then they go to the president. Now, I hope you see how screwed up this is. Judge Napolitano is on the Internet. He's a Fox analyst talking about how this is unconstitutional. I was cross-eyed talking to CW about it. And so surely, I'm sure he's got his cup of Jason Winter tea, or maybe you've turned it into a glass of Jason Winter iced tea, I don't know. But here's the deal, don't throw the tea at him, okay? That stuff is too good to actually throw at him, but I sure was considering it. So,
you're going to throw the tea at me?
I wanted to throw the tea at them, okay? The rudeness, the absurdity, the just blatant, God, this is worse than a horde of bullies.
It is worse than a whole horde of bullies, but what we have to recognize and what everybody needs to understand, that although unconstitutional in this move, believe it or not, and it pains me to say this, Val.
It's hurting me, making me crazy.
This is a legal move.
Listen, you know, you were telling me about this darn martial law thing. How do we get out of martial law, for God's sakes? You were telling me, and I was like, dang, that ever since the 1860s we've been under martial law, and that's why they get to do this stuff?
That's why it's a legal move.
See, okay, so how do we get out of martial law?
Well, let's clarify. They're under martial. He's using martial principles in the War Powers Act to operate, and it's legally to do so because we have been under martial law since 1861 when Lincoln invoked it.
How do we get back? How do we uninvoke? What do we do? Do we bring over J.K. Rowling, or what do we do, for God's sakes?
A couple of ways it can be done. The simplest way would be for the president to use his precious executive power and just say, martial law is over with.
That's fat chance for that.
Yeah, fat chance for that. Another fat chance of it not happening, and another solution would be, and there's actually three solutions that I know of. The second solution would be it go before Congress, and you take two-thirds of Congress, and they could overturn that.
Two-thirds of Congress run by the 12, who can't now say anything. I don't think now, so. What's the third choice?
The third choice would be the most difficult. Put a de jure president in place so he can do number one.
Would that be Tim Turner? Are we saying Tim Turner?
Well, he is the current interim Republic government president. So if it's Tim Turner, yes, I would follow Tim Turner to the location, wherever that location he's going to operate from, be, and witness him stopping martial law principles as a method of operating our government.
So how do we get him to do that?
Well, he needs to be elected in totally, permanently.
But we're in the Republic. Can't we just declare this in the Republic and say, poo-poo-poo?
Well, sure we can, but for a government to be a good government, a strong government, it needs three things. It needs money. It needs military, and it needs local enforcement. We don't have any of that. That's why we're interim.
Now, I understood that we had like over 139 countries in the world that backed us. Doesn't that make a difference?
Sure, it'll make a difference. But they're going to tread water. You know, they're not going to be totally putting their 110% behind us. They'll get behind us, but because we don't have the three things we mentioned, they know what could happen to a permanent government that doesn't have those three things, and they don't want to be a part of that, and they're not going to want to upset, let's just use that word, upset the de facto style government we have. And they also recognize, they recognize that the Republic of the United States and the United States, as we know it, the de facto United States, they will operate under the same laws except for martial law principles and War Powers Act.
Will not be part of
the Republic form of government, and it never will be. The only time we should be operating under martial laws is during a national emergency or threat to this great nation. Now, with that said, when our authorities have gotten comfortable and using martial law principles and War Powers Act, because it gives them much greater latitude.
Oh yeah, they're not accountable to anybody.
They're not accountable. They can get away with a lot of things. Now they'll sit and tell you, "Well, we've done a lot of great things because of it." And they've only done a lot of great things in my opinion, now this is just my opinion, I don't have proof of this. In my opinion, they'll say, well, we've been able to operate quicker and to get these things done. Well, to me, I think that's just a little carrot. Because what they've done to show good faith is just enough so they can keep going on with the monumental greed and back room deals that they're dealing with that personally benefit them probably greater than benefit to the people of this great nation. We see it going on all the time. I mean, here's a good one for you. You were talking about personal gain, personal benefit, using your power. Let's look at the current de facto president, who now, according to media, is having trouble, or they're scooting around $3 billion in profit. They're saying his profit from bank to bank internationally, trying to...
So you're talking about Barack Obama shifting the stuff around, and he's... And this is just $3 billion out of one transaction?
He was on apparently some sort of bank trading, as I understand, if I'm reading the media correctly. And he's got $3 billion now in profit. Now, how could a man go from seamlessly a pauper, you know, 3.5 years ago, to having $3 billion today?
Well, I'm sure he's got more than $3 billion, hasn't he? I mean, isn't $3 billion just the deals off one transaction?
I think it's a combination of a few transactions. But anyway, it's a combination of banking transactions and using banks. And the way I'm reading it, now, this is being done for the benefit of the people of this great nation. That's one thing. But that's not what I'm reading. I'm reading it to the benefit for the president. Personal benefit.
Ken Cousins, now, we're talking here. Will you join us too, please?
Yeah, it seems to me abuse pouts are going on. Hey, Ken, how you doing?
Good morning or good afternoon.
I can hear you being quiet, okay?
Yeah, I'm snoring.
No, you're not snoring. I didn't hear snoring. I heard you being quiet.
No, you heard me on mute. I had the mute button so that I would give my undivided attention to CW. Well, I have nothing but agreement with CW. There's a few points that I would like to add that gives historical context. One is, when I first started studying law and had a few mentors who were more advanced in my knowledge of history and law in the mid-90s, one of the things I was introduced to was that in 1899, there was a Hague Treaty signed that had to do with describing the nature of a belligerent individual or organization or party or what have you. And timing is always everything. In international law, as we know, there are 99-year leases because if something is in place or held by somebody for over 100 years, it reverts to a permanent status. So they established a treaty, which, of course, the U.S. Corporation was one of the signatories, of defining what a belligerent was. And this was actually the basis for, in 1933, when FDR on March 9th declared an emergency, invoking the war powers. If you watch his March 6th inauguration speech, he invokes Congress to grant him war powers, continuing what CW is talking about from the 1860s, the emergency war powers, or what's called a relaxed status of martial rule. It's not martial law where you have, you know, boots in the streets, but you are under martial control, military control. And in 1933, when the emergency was established, the Trading with the Enemy Act from 1917 was amended to define U.S. citizens as the enemy. And this goes back to the 1899 belligerent treaty signed in The Hague, establishing that the people were belligerents. And this is what's called a declaration of mixed war. Mixed war meaning it can be social, it can be economic, it can be quasi-military, and all the rest of that. So this is why CW says Constitution has nothing to do with it. It has been, the Constitution has been effectively out of the picture for a very long time. And then let's come up to 2005. Everybody always questions and wonders why New Orleans was left to swallow or wallow in the aftermath of Katrina for almost a week. The reason is because there was something passed in the 1870s in New York called the Judicature Act that linked the jurisdiction of the Civil Code of New York, where the Federal Reserve is housed and domiciled to New Orleans. And New Orleans is the only place in North America where Roman civil code, the Napoleonic codes from Napoleon when he sold New Orleans to the U.S. in 1803, where it's established.
So we just never changed.
Yeah, the long and the short of it is there's a historical link. This is why they have justification for doing what they've done the last 6 years. We're defined as an enemy. We're defined as a belligerent. We, meaning the people of America. And in 2005, the reason the Fed did not go into New Orleans is because the governor of Louisiana refused to abdicate her jurisdiction to them. And they played a game of attrition. Okay, we'll let the world watch and scream and everything and let people die in the murky waters of the aftermath of Katrina. She finally capitulated. They came in. They came in with a private mercenary army called Blackwater, and full martial law was declared in New Orleans. It has never been lifted, and that linked to New York and to the Federal Reserve and to the emergency powers that the president has as extraordinary martial law, and anything that touches the context of the Federal Reserve, which is everything that almost every so-called enemy of the state belligerent walk around with Federal Reserve notes in their pocket, are considered an enemy. And this is the historical framework of what CW is talking about. So they can do anything they want. And it only takes one thing, in my opinion, which is the people to stand up and say, we do not consent, we do not agree. And that's what we have done, obviously, with the Republic and all the things that we can do with the Republic to petition the world to support us in removing the presumption of martial law.
Oh, you know, it's so funny because this is my, what do you call it, my, you're supposed to rant. I don't know, if did you know that? You're supposed to rant on every radio show?
Well, I think I ranted just then. Maybe it was quiet rant.
Well, I mean, there's actually a formula for everything. When people don't get books published and stuff, a lot of times it's not because they're bad writers. It's because they didn't follow the formula. So after years and years and years of being on the radio, I had this expert call me up and explain to me that I was supposed to rant in the beginning of the program and rant at the end. Well, I got so busy ranting that I don't even know if Brooke Peterson is here. Are you here, Brooke? No. See, I can't find Brooke Peterson, who's actually kind of an amazing human being in her own right. And I got so upset when I saw this Super Congress thing. It was just breathtaking. So I've called Brooke, actually, and left a telephone number for her, and I will tell you, Mercury in retrograde has been hopping around here pretty good because they couldn't upload the correct information on the website because, for whatever reason, the Internet's down.
I have a question, Val.
Yes.
You brought on this Mercury in retrograde. I have no idea what you're talking about. I feel super ignorant. Help me out.
There are three times a year, there's a period of about 21 days in which everything just gets screwy. And I didn't used to think that it was really true. I thought, you know, but I used to have an Orange Julius business CW years ago in Santa Monica. And I would keep track of how many things they sold and what days and what kind of stuff happened. And sure enough, all the time, the things that I were keeping track of, I would have more issues to handle. Mercury in retrograde, unless you're born in a retrograde period, it has to do with the movement of the planets. When you realize that the sun and the moon actually move the tides, you get that they're pretty powerful things, these planets. And there's periods, there's three of them a year, at which things just have a tendency to not work or to break down. And it's not usually something that's expected. It's usually something like the lights going off or the website wouldn't load. I got an email from my webmaster saying we tried to load the website and it refuses to load. And I was just like, okay, I wonder what else is going to happen today. And
well,
so there's Beverly. Can't find Beverly, right? Website doesn't load. Lights are off. We get locked in the court. There's accidents on the street. The wrong package gets picked up. And you know what? It's just, well, I don't care. It's just what's happening today.
Hey, Val, let me add a couple of technical. CW, the reason it's called retrograde is because, as you know, all the planets have their relative orbit. Mercury orbits the sun every 88 days, And because it's inside the Earth orbit in relationship to the Sun, there's three times, occasionally four times, last year it happened four times in the year, but at least three times when the relative movement of Mercury appears to go backwards from our position in the sky, standing on the Earth. And because Mercury is considered to influence communications, contracts, agreements, things like that, transportation, it generally is a period where it causes things to go backwards, like lights going off or things disappearing off of computers or missing planes, things like that. But there's also a positive thing about it, too, which is it's an opportunity to go inward and allow it to bring up all of our unconscious stuff that's ready to be cleared and dealt with either individually or collectively. So for about the last 5 years, I've looked at it as not a negative per se. It's just something that gives more of an opportunity for internal processing. But nonetheless, there will definitely always be things that that seem to blow up in your face, and then you have to deal with it. You know, and you know, and also it's sort of like the time period when you know, solar flares might knock a few communication satellites out of the sky or something like that. So, and it has definite influence on macro scale things like, you know, renegade governments trying to usurp power. It's interesting that one of the things that Valerie, you sent to me about this in the Super Congress mentioned that August 2nd is the anniversary date of when Adolf Hitler in 1934 was granted extraordinary powers to deal with the runaway inflation in Germany and get control of it. And that was really the beginning of his reign of terror and power in Europe. And isn't it interesting they chose August 2nd as their debt ceiling date and all this stuff started happening?
Yeah, I think it's very interesting. It's very, very interesting. So I'm going to promise you guys, I'm going to promise you a raw food conversation and also a Kangen water conversation or a conversation about good water. Beverly Peterson started with me when I originally started Waking Up in America back in 1987. And she was on the show for many years, and I really trust her when it comes to areas of health. I also wanted to acknowledge her because I think Bev is in her 70s, and I think her husband is in his early 80s, and they're both rollerbladers. So you have two rollerbladers and myself playing racquetball, and one of the things that I wanted to have conversations with you about. And if you see, Ken Cousins is not an old man, okay? He's a very healthy-looking man, and CW is very healthy, too, and I expect you to be able to see these men looking healthy into their later years because the tech, along with the financial things that were changing in the Republic, we're allowing in technologies, and we're inviting in technologies that have been suppressed for many years, even including, you know, free electricity and stuff like that through Tesla's things, so swiping good ideas and suppressing good ideas has been going on for absolutely years. And when you understand that we don't even need most of this oil that the world is fighting over, the reason they're bothering to fight over it is because they spent all that money on rigs and extracting it on the ground and locating it. But there's really, I'm just looking at Dennis Weaver's picture here at the bottom of the website. I was standing next to Dennis Weaver in 2001 at Paramount Studios over on Culver Boulevard, and we were doing the hydrogen car drive in where we're partnering with BMW, and we were driving around these gorgeous little BMW cars, and I talked to the man from BMW. They've had the technology to have hydrogen cars since I believe it was 1978, something of that nature. So you know, it's just the outrageousness as it goes along. And truthfully, you guys, I don't see anything that we can really do and if we don't put our attention on the Republic and just have everybody paying attention over there, you know? I don't know. What do you think? I'm looking at the calls.
The de facto situation is too far gone to fix. they're beyond control. And yeah, they're beyond broken.
Do you know Bill Thornton?
Yes, of course. I think
Bill Thornton talked to our assembly on Monday. You came in, I think, and then and Bill talked quite a while, actually, till about 10:30 at night. And he's the Magna Carta, and you would like the Magna Carta. The thing is, Bill still, I think, is... I got the impression, Ken, that Bill still thinks that the de facto system can be saved, and I don't.
Right. Yeah, CW knows Bill very well. He hosted him for a number of seminars that he did over the last few years.
Didn't you love that stuff about his stuff about sovereignty and things like that, CW? But I don't see how
it can be saved. But he believes you can work within it if you use the law properly and use common law principles and use them correctly. I think that's what he believes more than anything. He shows you how to set it aside and use common law principles.
Well, you know what's cool about him? What was cool about him is that he was really talking about the sovereign. Remember when we were talking about that and we were saying, well, we might not be safe and stuff like that? Well, yeah, we have to be sovereigns because that's what it's all about. And
well, everybody is, whether you like it or not.
Huh?
Everybody is in this great nation, whether you like it or not. And the biggest sovereign of all is our current president. So when we talk about it, and for, you know, when we
I
talk about...
I thought you were the biggest sovereign. Aren't you the biggest sovereign?
No, our biggest
CW. CW looks bigger than Tim to me. I think
he's bigger. Listen. Sovereignty in Thornton's conversation is about owning yourself as a king and queen. And you know what? I don't know how much you heard of that conversation, but one of the things that he talked about was when we're in court, and if the judge says something, all we have to do is say, I object.
That's right. He's absolutely right.
He didn't have to say anything else. All we have to say, he said there was... that we didn't have to fight them all the time, that we could pick our battles, and if we knew we were sovereigns, we could just simply say, I object. And he also said that we were the ones that actually got to submit the decisions to the court.
That's correct.
So there's a heck of a lot of power and sovereignty and things of this nature that are available to us.
There is, and this... The authorities and the de facto style government that we have don't want you to recognize your powers as a sovereign. In fact, they want you to believe if you feel you're a sovereign, you're also a domestic terrorist. Well, listen to this. If you use that definition, our biggest terrorist is the de facto president.
Mm-hmm. You know, don't even get me going on the Nobel Peace Prize. The biggest piece of junk I ever laid ears on.
Yeah.
Did you hear why they gave him the Nobel Peace Prize? It was the possibility of peace in the future. Well, they must have been looking under a lot of garbage cans for that one.
How Orwellian. Everything, you know, we're living in the George Orwell's worst nightmare, and, you know, it's all doublespeak. But, you know, everything is precise in language. So, like CW, when you use the phrase domestic terrorist, you know, and I know, and I'm sure Val knows, but maybe not the listening audience, what the word domestic means. Domestic means specifically the federal zone. So technically speaking, they're accurate. When you're in the federal zone and you use pieces of paper contrary to public policy and contrary to the Trading with the Enemy Act or the Belligerency Treaty or whatever else, you are, quote-unquote, as a domestic terrorist. But when you stand in your true capacity, withstanding as a sovereign on the land, in the republic, then you're not in the domestic zone to begin with. They have no relationship to us as such.
Hmm. You know what I'm looking at? I'm looking at the conference calls and websites listing. So I have a schedule of weekly conference calls here. We have constitutional studies on Sunday at 6. Why don't you find out what you actually got happening for you there? You can go to the republicfortheunitedstates.org, and on there you'll find the Sunday Constitutional chat at 424-203-8000. That's 424-203-8000, and the code is 819054. We also have introductory calls for people that are interested in finding out about the Republic on Wednesdays at 6. Same conference call number, 424-203-8000, and same code number, 819054-POUND. Once again, 819054-POUND. Now, we have a different, we have a round table on Thursday evenings where you can meet all the different people in the Republic. That's Thursdays from 6 to 7:30, and that's also Pacific. 712-432-0075. That's 712-432-0075. Code number 851-350-POUND. Now, Tad Patterson, if you go to our website at wakingupinamerica.com, and I recommend that you do, as I said, you'll notice that it's outdated, but that's just Mercury doing its tricks today. Here's the deal on that. You'll see Tad Patterson's and the Tim Turner seminars, and those seminars that Tad's got on tape, he's got monthly groups and things of that nature. The numbers of people that are using Tad's information and getting the power back are terrific, and for a small fee, monthly fee, he provides you with all the most current information and the access to the different people that are doing the work, and Tad is definitely worth communicating with, and if you would like to have me forward you information on that, simply send me an email at val@wakingupinamerica.com. Once again, val@wakingupinamerica.com. And Leo Delgado, bless his heart, if your house is in foreclosure or you need a forensic analyst, this is the guy that you want to check with. And if Leo doesn't answer the phone, you'll probably get a chance to talk to Mary. That telephone number is 855-719-7770. Once again, 855-719-7770. Now, if you've been looking all over the place for good ear cones or ear candles on the Internet, go to Koning Company, CONINGCOMPANY.com. And this 5,000-year-old tradition actually takes care of sinus problems, neck aches, all kinds of things for a lot of people. It's not a 100% cure, but it's something that's very special. And a lot of times people hear better and all kinds of things. There's just so many things that actually are available to us, but because the FDA is so desperate to have us, and the Pure Food and Drug Administration are so desperate to have us on drugs all the time, that we actually don't have permission on the air to say that anything actually makes a difference or cures you. And that, of course, brings Jason Winter tea to my mind, and it's the perfect weather for Jason Winter iced tea. I actually put a little pineapple juice in it, CW. It's pretty good.
It is good.
Yeah,
and
it is.
They call that a plantation iced tea. I learned that in Hawaii several years ago.
That's where I got the idea. It was from you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I knew I was smart, but I also knew I was pushed towards it by somebody, and you're the one.
You see, Arnold Palmer made famous the lemonade and iced tea mix. And when I was playing golf over there in Hawaii several years ago, they asked if I wanted one, because I said, I want something refreshing, not just iced tea. I want something in it. And they said, how about an Arnold Palmer? And I got one, and I tried it, and I am one of the rare people that did not like it. I just didn't care for it. And then she goes, well, why don't you try a plantation iced tea? I go, what's that? I'm thinking, wow, a bunch of fruits and everything on iced tea, something. And she goes, well, it's iced tea with some pineapple juice in it. I said, well, let's try that. And, boy, I taste refreshing, excellent. You can use unsweetened pineapple juice or sweetened pineapple juice. When I use sweetened pineapple juice, I don't want to use that much. But with unsweetened pineapple juice, I like to use like half and half tea, half pineapple juice. And it's a super refreshing drink. More often than not, it's usually one-third to two-thirds iced tea. I cheat a little bit, and I go half and half is what I do.
You know what's good about it is I use Jason Winter tea to cut juices and things of that nature. First of all, I don't know. I've been off sugar for so long that if I drink straight orange juice or something like that, or I drink the straight juices, they're too sweet for me. So I'll do 50-50 on almost any juice, and it tastes great.
I
have half the calories, too, by the way.
Yeah, you'll go half the calories. You're right. I tried it with grapefruit juice. I didn't care for it with grapefruit juice.
Well, play. I mean, everybody's got their own particular thing. It doesn't take anything for you just to experiment with this and then let us know. And, you know, while they're doing it, I mean, they could probably do something crazy in the kitchen with a knife or something, or slip on the floor if they stand on a banana peel. And then, of course, there's the Emergency Management Solutions Emergency Kit.
I've heard about those guys.
You know, I have your four-person kit, and I'm impressed, okay? I'm impressed with all the little goodies it has. Even the bagged water, I thought that was pretty cute.
Well, we don't make the bagged water, but that water was specifically designed for long storage, which is good for emergency use because a lot of people put their emergency kits together, or like boats and the Coast Guard, who require boats to have emergency supplies on them. They'll make a floatable emergency kit, and it'll have this prepackaged water. Now, I'm not talking about bottled water. I'm talking about the water that you're talking that you have, and it's Coast Guard approved. You'll see on the packages that it's Coast Guard approved, and it's mainly the Coast Guard is saying, okay, we've looked at the process, and we've seen the test, and we approve this to last, you know, the long period of time. So it's.
I was going to ask you how long does bagged water last?
About 5 years.
Really? Okay, so yep. If I haven't used up this bag water in 5 years, I should start drinking and put in some new stuff, right?
Yeah, if you go beyond 5 years, that doesn't mean it's no good. What that means is you'll probably get a more metallic taste because it is in a foil pouch.
Yep.
And I constantly tell people, and it's a bit of work, but if you wait till it's 5 years, use it to water your lawn, water your plants then. And it might be a bit of a hassle to open up 4 ounce packets of water, but, you know, it's... if you want to be environmentally friendly, don't throw it in a dumpster. Put it on your lawn.
So I've been trying to inspire CW to put little bottles of wine and stuff like that in the emergency kit.
I just think you're going to say the wine. You want me to put the wine in there?
Hey, listen, I've got all kinds of ideas for making a special Waking Up in America kit. Because, you know, you may want to take your emergency kit with you when you go trekking to the Himalayas or whatever. The players in Waking Up in America are pretty much global citizens, in part. I hear some very interesting stories from people as they travel. So, well, you can see a lot of really interesting stuff is going on. There's things that were, there's spiritual and financial reevaluations that are occurring in the world. There's all kinds of shifts happening. And I guess I just wanted to be reassured, guys, that finding out that there's $20 trillion in the Federal Reserve, does that refuel these buggers?
Dinars, you mean?
Do they get refueled from that, or is there any way we can say, look, you know the part, Ken, where they gave $16 trillion of our money to the banks in Europe? I don't think we owe anything.
Yeah. No, well, important.
Pardon?
Who's holding? I was wondering if Ken knew who, what agency, what branch is holding that?
The Federal Reserve is holding it, I'm told.
Well, I don't know if it's the Fed or the Treasury. Hey, before we go into that, I have to say this. Last week we were talking about, you know, emergency preparedness, and I didn't get a chance to come back around. I have the greatest, most inexpensive emergency preparedness kit. It cost $99, and all I did was attach a transmitter to Kelby's RV because he's got a year's full of supplies and food. So if there's an emergency, I just turn on the little tracker and I go find where Kelby is, and that's my emergency.
That is brilliant.
Yeah,
and Kelby really knows how to get set up too.
I've watched him and a couple of times. So, you know, that's my emergency kit.
Oh, that's totally funny.
But back to that subject. That $16 trillion, that was actually I forget who, it was a Senate subcommittee or whomever allocated it for the audit or somewhat of an audit of the Fed the first time. They actually found that $16 trillion was distributed in all this bailout money, you know, not that $787 billion, but $16 trillion was distributed to banks and primary institutions worldwide from the Federal Reserve. Those are hidden taxes attached to the U.S. citizens of the corporation to pay off the last 3 years. It was like what you were just saying before we started, Val, that it is rumored, we don't know for sure, that the U.S. Treasury is holding possibly 20
trillion
Iraqi dinars. And if the dinar comes out, as it's rumored, above $5, maybe $8, you're talking about $160 trillion. Now, what are they going to use that for? Are they going to pay off the debt, or are they going to just line their pockets?
People, do you know what Kuwait did with it when they revalued?
Yeah, tell us.
Well, from what I heard, Kuwait bought every person in their country a house, and I actually... CW, I actually heard that they gave them each three cars, but I couldn't believe that, so I said one.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Kuwait did.
I'll take a Maybach.
So, well, me, I want a Tesla, actually.
I'll take a Bentley with a driver.
Okay, very good.
CW, will you be my driver? I think you'd look great in a tux and one of those little beanie hats.
As long as you'll drive my Maybach wherever I need to go, I'll be yours.
Okay.
So what is a Maybach?
Great. I don't know.
But Maybach is Mercedes' answer to a Rolls-Royce. Google it. It is one fantastic vehicle.
And how do you spell it?
M-A-B-A-C-K, I believe, or V-A-K, Maybach.
Okay, I've had two Bentleys, and they're worth it.
Well, Maybachs are Bentleys on steroids.
Well, you know, Bentleys are actually Rolls-Royces with different radiators. Oh, I'm looking
correct
at it right now. That is a nice-looking car.
Gorgeous-looking car.
It's M-A-Y-B-A-C-K or B-A-C-H.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right. M-A-Y-B-A-C-H. You're right.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
The seats in the back are reclining seats in the back of the Maybach.
That is a nice-looking. I never heard of it before. It's very nice-looking.
And the price tag's reasonable for a mere $500,000, which is...
I think we should give one to everybody in the Republic, don't you?
Anybody that wants one should be able to have it, because in Kuwait, they all got three cars, and it seems to me if you want a Maybach or you want, you know, I kind of was torn on the Bentley, but then I called up Vanderplug Motors a few years ago, Ken, and they told me that the Bentley hadn't really been good since 1965. That after 1965, they actually were... they weren't as good as they had been before. So that kind of soured me on it. I had a Razorback Bentley and a 35 Bentley, 47 Razorback and a 35 Bentley. And let me tell you, they're nice.
Yeah, I bet.
But what I will also tell you is that 35 years after that car had been made, 45 years, the leather and upholstery in the back finally went out after 45 years.
My Lord, that's excellent.
That's my point, okay? And people aren't used to being, they're used to things that break and fall apart in a year or two or five or whatever. When the Mustang first came out, guys, I was just so turned on to the Mustang. It came out in the 60s. My hubby and I went over to see it over on Westwood Boulevard, and when I closed the door, I said, not this car. It rattled. But about 3 years ago, I broke down and I bought myself a Mustang convertible after all those years. And you know what? It was the cutest piece of junk I've ever owned. Really? But I'll tell you, one of the best stories. Oh, yeah, everything. It was just exactly like it had been in the 1960s. I'd hope it would get better. Somebody ran into the back of it, and it crinkled all the paint on the back bumper. The door panel fell off. And it was like a year old. It didn't work properly and all that, but it was a royal blue Mustang, okay? And one of the best stories of all time, which is why people do this, I'm driving down Topanga Canyon Boulevard, and I'm stopped at Ventura in my Mustang, and I've got the stereo turned up. It was perfect summer car, which is what I kept it for. It was exactly 3 months, and I gave it back. Sitting on Topanga Canyon, and I hear this little girl go, Daddy, Daddy, what's that? And he goes, sweetheart, that's a Mustang.
You mean
it's fun to drive around things that do that to people. It really is.
You think? I thought he would say,
I can picture you
inside the Mustang.
No, it's a Mustang.
I can picture behind the new Mustang Super Snake.
A Super Snake?
Yeah, Super
Snake.
I'm looking
it up right now. Mustang.
It's a Shelby product.
What about the Morgan? What do you think of those?
Well, they're okay, but, you know, you get behind the Super Snake, it's got the...
Oh, my God, that's gorgeous.
Yeah, about 600-700 horsepower under the hood there.
Try 750.
750 horsepower under the hood. And, yeah, when you start that up, it talks to you.
The problem is, you just, you know, I'm going to tell you that I'll be 71 this year, and my dad sold Electrolux vacuum cleaners, and we had one of those Electrolux vacuum cleaners for 55 years. One vacuum cleaner for 55 years. This stuff, even though it's really good looking, I mean, maybe the Bentley, maybe your other Mubarak or whatever, maybe there's some quality there when you're paying $500,000 or $300,000 for a car. But I'm not convinced that this Super Snake wouldn't have the same crummy door that my Mustang had.
It might. But you know a car that I think really has stood the test of time and is still reliable today? You're going to think of that.
Pardon?
Nope.
What?
A Volkswagen. Volkswagen Beetle from the 60s.
You actually are going to try to sell that on me, I who used to sell Volkswagens?
Well, let me tell you something. You still see kids running around with them because they're cheap, they're easy to fix, and they just do not stop running.
Actually, they do.
Hey, you know, Val, I know what we can get for CW for his birthday. We'll get a match pair of lime green Volkswagen Beetles to mount on his Maybach.
There you go. Yep.
We'll just put them on the back as,
I got to tell you, my first car, my very first car was a Volkswagen. And I kept it several years. It was already old when I got it. And I put, I only had one engine in it, but I took good care of it. And I probably put 150,000 miles on that car over the years I had it. And, it still ran strong when I got rid of it. I'm just tired of driving it. In 1976, I went out and bought my first new car I ever bought, and that was a Chevrolet Camaro at that time. And I quit driving the Volkswagen.
A 1966 Volkswagen, and it was a great car. And then we bought a Superbug, a yellow Superbug after that. And,
yep.
And we ended up selling that. And then I ended up with Carmen Ghio's and things of that nature. And there was a point at which, when I was doing Volkswagens, that I couldn't keep it going. I remember having a couple of different Volkswagens, and I was spending all of my money with a mechanic. After a certain point, cars that are old have other things that happen with them, unless they've been totally rebuilt or something of that nature, or they started out as incredible quality in the first place. But my friend Joe Duguay, he could actually change a VW motor in 7 minutes. And we used to buy and sell them.
Yeah.
Okay. So we'd pick up a Volkswagen with a bad bumper. We'd go to the junkyard, and we'd replace the bumper and repaint the car for $6.
That's what I'm talking about. They were so easy to work on, so easy to fix. Kids got them, put them back together, and they just kept running. The ones back in the 70s, or the ones from the 60s, they just kept running, running, and running, and running. I see kids driving them today, not as much as I did maybe 10 years ago, but you still see the cars from the 60s and 70s, Beetles, still running around.
Well, I'm going to give you an example. I'm sitting here with a G3 PowerBook computer from 1998, okay? That power computer has, this little computer here, this 14-incher, has outlasted two regular Macs, the big expensive ones. And this thing is still plunking along, okay? So it needs a new battery pack. So I call up, and they don't carry the battery packs anymore. And that's what they do. There's just certain things that they don't carry or they don't do, because this is part of the plan, and this is part of what the Republic is about, is that inside of the federal government and all of those issues, we are designed to be consumers and to be discarding things and be devaluing things and to be moving stuff along and to be penalized and all of that good stuff. Try getting ahead in this culture. It doesn't happen here. So
you keep buying, keep buying, keep buying.
Yeah. The whole, what, remember what Bush said? Was it, do you remember, Ken, something about shopping after 9/11?
Yeah, go shop for, I forget the exact words.
I can't remember the exact words, but you were, the American people were given the instructions to shop their way out of the horror of 9/11.
Right, exactly.
So this is part of what we're doing. I'm just trying to find myself, I'm trying to extract myself from the electromagnetic pull, you know? Did either of you guys ever do any channel swimming?
No.
Okay, when you channel swim, one of the things that you do is you put grease on your body. It's really schlucky stuff, so that the cold water doesn't get you. And also, and then you swim with other people so that the sharks don't get you. And right now, the Republic is the best way to put your grease on your body. And the members of the Republic are some of the coolest people I have ever met in my entire life. And we actually get together in Visalia once a month. And I'm happy to go up there and hang out with these people because there's a chance that if you join the Republic, and there's a chance that if you group together with other people, that we will actually be able to get through the shark-infested waters without freezing to death or getting eaten alive. So is that too weird?
No.
Did you like that analogy?
Well, it was okay, but it was...
You got a couple minutes left. You can do your own analogy to end things.
Well, yeah. No, that was good enough. Yeah, swimming through the sharks. I don't know what else to add for that one.
Well, I know that you've been working on actually creating coins, and I was wondering if your coins are done yet.
Oh, yeah. They've been done for months. And anybody, and I never got that website quite launched because we were waiting for pictures, but we did get the pictures finally done. It probably will be launched this week, and that would be PanteraPCA.org. But, you know, I was looking at a website of the Lakota Sioux. The Lakota Sioux are the native First Nation peoples of the Dakotas. And about 2 years ago, they finally got completely fed up with the U.S. corporation, the federal government. They basically just gave them their walking papers. They said, you don't have authority over us. You've abrogated every clause of every treaty you have ever signed with us or any other nation of North America, and we've had enough. We are absolutely unequivocally sovereign. And they've established a bank, and it's a silver bank. And I have been looking at their website and how it's configured and have some very good ideas of how we can do that across our republic as a national function, not just something for California. But if anybody wants the California coins, they're available for more influx to do more designs. We can do designs for every state. We can set up a structure for a silver bank for the republic. So if somebody has a look at the Lakota Bank, they can see how that's set up. We can do the same. We are a sovereign. We have our own authority. We have also said we've had enough, and we're standing firm on our capacity as a republic. So there are a lot of things coming, and that's just one of them in the republic. So anybody out there, you haven't touched that toe to the water to get greased up and jump on in. We're ready. We're swimming. Right.
Let's I'm just looking at the time here to see if there's even time to ask this question, and I think there is if you can do it in a sentence or two. Why would we be exclusive to silver and not include gold in the bank?
Well, no, it could be gold as well. I'm just referencing to how the Lakota have done it, and it's more of a you know, a lower denomination of
more
value
fluid.
That can be, yeah, more, but yeah, I mean, that's, there's a lot more being developed, at the national level with the, I think about 3 or 4 weeks ago on our
Wednesday
calls.
We've got 45 seconds left, and I'm going to give it to CW.
Yeah, go for it.
You want to end up here, CW? Your closing word?
Sure, everybody to our Sunday night constitutional call where I'll be assisting the teachings of it, and I urge everybody to visit the republicoftheunitedstates.org website. You'll find some of our past teachings archived there. Last week we spent a whole hour on the preamble of the Constitution, and the reason why I say it that way is the preamble is not very long.
20 seconds.
If you know the preamble, you'll know the Constitution. I'd like to have everybody keep a smile on their face, and the sunshine will never lose you. Have a healthy and prosperous day, and we'll see you next week.
And really, tune in to his call for the Republic and the Constitution. This program has been brought to you by Kirkgaard Media. Our radio partner is coningcompany.com, and that's coningcompany.com. Dr. James Murphy, In Memoriam, and drvalerie.com, and doctor is all spelled out. We thank our producers and sponsor C.W. Wright of EmergencyManagementSolutions.org. You just heard the guy talking. He's like, this is his life is to make your life better. JasonWinterT.com. And a big thanks to Tad Patterson at YouHaveTheRight.com, at Leo Delgado. Ron Hayes, our research assistant. God bless you, Ron. I hear you're moving this week, and I know how hard you've worked at that. We also want to thank our team at Voice America, Brad Comer, Jeff Spinard, and Nathan Jett. And I guess Mike is our new chief engineer. So we want to say thank you to Bent Migan for our theme music, Almost Ordinary People. You know, next week, invite a friend to listen. Write us at val@wakingupinamerica.com. And remember, visit wakingupinamerica.com and sign up for our alerts. Sidious, Altius, Fortius, Swifter, Higher, Stronger. Keep in touch. Pay attention. Go to the Republic. Let people know that there is a way out. And I personally think they're too messed up to fix. So looks to me like the Republic is the way to pull it off. Thank you so much for listening. And we'll invite Beverly back for next week, okay? Take care.
This is for you.
Thank you for joining us today for Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkgaard. Waking Up in America can be heard live every Wednesday, 12 p.m. Pacific Time on voiceamerica.com, and Valerie welcomes all emails at heavenincorporated.com.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program.